So I think we are at the paragraph that begins our fundamental cognition of the absolute.
Yeah, last time we read that. It's on page 328 in the PDF. It's the paragraph that starts with our fundamental cognition.
Right, right. So, to back up a little bit, as we saw, Sri Aurobindo is looking for this origin of determination in the cosmos and moving into experience to find it after positing a kind of scheme of involution and evolution. And the principle that has involved itself, in other words, it's not really just a principle, but reality itself that is presenting itself to itself as an involution. And out of it, evolving its properties in a graded and phased manner. And so the question that he raises is, how can we be sure of this? This is a hypothesis. So, it's interesting that he proceeds firstly in this fashion, because we may say that experience, spiritual experience, from a certain point of view, need not proceed from questioning in this sense of questioning what is reality, in this sense, and then moving towards answering it in a systematic intellectual manner that leads it to spiritual possibilities through yoga. But it also opens up the whole history of Indian yoga, which has in fact been in close relationship with the philosophical discourse. And that is something that we don't realize or recognize to that extent today, because there seems to have been a sundering of that philosophical history. That's why in the history of Indian spiritual practice, the two wings of darshana and yoga have been so closely allied. Of course, it has been supposed that darshana proceeds after yoga. In other words, one experiences first, or one practices whatever one has been told, and then validates a certain that experience through thought. But it isn't as simple as that. The two go together. And it's interesting that I recently came across the works of a great Kashmir Shaivist thinker, Abhinava Gupta, as interpreted by his modern follower, Lakshmanju, Swami Lakshmanju. And in this passage from his famous work, multi-volume work, Tantra Loka, he talks about the importance of the coexistence of Purusha and Buddhi. Buddhi as a faculty of the mind, of the prakriti, the manas prakriti, prakriti of mind, which must be active just as the Purusha must be active. And referring to the Purusha, as it were, for its understanding, but also leading to greater experience, guiding in a sense, almost like a charioteer, the understanding and the experiencing capability of the prakriti in contact with the Purusha. So this, in a sense, is what Sri Aurobindo is doing. After having raised the entire question of how to find or validate a certain hypothesis that he has laid out, he is first giving us a reason for where we should look. And so this method that Sri Aurobindo is following has its roots both in a Western philosophy of knowledge, and particularly of modern knowledge, as well as has roots in an earlier Indian rational / spiritual tradition. So we find that he moves from this idea of a validation of involution, not in the ground, in other words, in matter, but in the origin as above. And the reason he does that is he says that whatever is involved is so asleep at the lower levels that accessing it is extremely difficult. But the human being has the capacity of you know, withdrawing consciousness from its immersion in the prakriti, its immersion in the determinations of nature, and it is at that level that we must look for a solution and see what we can find. And that's where he parts company with the speculative tradition of Western philosophy and moves into the tradition of yoga, the historical tradition of yoga. And the first yogic stage that he is referring to is that of Sankhya, where one silences the mind and sees what it is emerging as the pure Purusha, pure witness self. So there the individual witness self, he points out, can be free of the determinations of nature, and therefore we discover something in ourselves that is not conditioned by nature, that can observe nature. But the question arises as to where these thoughts and these activities are originating. If we are a pure witness, we are not the creators of these thoughts. Or is it that these thoughts are created within a nature, our own nature, which has certain internal conditionings, and we only have managed to escape from that in a part of our being? Or is it that this kind of determination is coming from some cosmic being to which we have no access at present? Or is it that it is coming from an even higher vantage, a transcendental being that in some sense is the progenitor of both this kind of escape or a impersonality as well as the determinations that we experience in nature? So since at the level of personal Purusha Prakriti distinction, we cannot come to a conclusive answer on this, he takes us further and makes us look at some kind of cosmic consciousness. Is there a cosmic consciousness where such a question can be answered? And such a cosmic consciousness is what he calls overmind. Overmind would be to the individual that consciousness in which all individuals are contained. The entire cosmos, the whole of nature is contained. So there, he points out that there is still a problem, which is that, or rather, let us say the problem persists or continues. And we see that even there, it is possible to arrive at a formulation of the entire cosmos as a witness being that ultimately fades into a non-being, and on the other hand, to look at the cosmos as an enormous being, an infinite universal being that is full of the self-determinations of nature. So we are left with this duality at the peaks of the overmind. This is what he's pointing out. The question we started with at the individual level has only magnified itself into a cosmic question. And since it has done that, we can suppose that if there is a answer to this question in the heights, it must be beyond this cosmic consciousness in some transcendental in which it must sink. Now, this has been the usual answer of all the so-called Mayavadin philosophies of India, because they claim that if there must be a absolute which cannot lend itself to any determinations, because it is absolute, it is radically infinite, it cannot lend itself to any scheme of ordering or determination. You see, this idea has been also at the root of all the what are called monotheistic religions of the world. The monotheistic religions, like, for example, the Abrahamic family of religions that has privileged an iconism in the representation of God. In other words, you cannot represent God because God is radically infinite. Any representation, whether iconic or through images or through ideas, fall short of the radical infinity and indeterminability of the divine. So Sri Aurobindo is asserting the fact that, of course, such a radically infinite absolute is the very definition of the transcendent. But out of it, determinations have arisen. And therefore, a principle of self-determination must also be present within it. This is something that at the level of mind, we cannot fully grasp. Because at the level of mind, somehow the polarities become absolutely contrary. It follows the first principle of logic, which is that of the law of non-contradiction. You cannot have A and not A coexisting. So whatever contrary or contradiction that we come across, we suppose that that is a illusion caused by some kind of a illusion creating capacity like Maya, and escaping out of that, we drown ourselves in some ocean from which there is no real return. Or if there is a return, there is no remembrance. See, it is we sink in the ocean of what is called Turiya, or the fourth reality beyond description, the indescribable, the ineffable. But Sri Aurobindo is not satisfied with that answer. And somehow, as he points out, if this radically infinite reality beyond the overmind has within it a power or principle of self-determination, then it can determine its own truths in creations. And these creations can be infinite in number. In other words, different principles of self-creation may exist. And the kind of creation in which we find ourselves is one such, and one such in which one may say a equivalent ordering to the radical infinity is trying to assert itself. Now this is a paradox, but a paradox nevertheless that is solvable only in supermind. Now similarly, other paradoxes such as the problem of the individual person and the impersonal infinite are encountered here. One sees that one can assert the personal reality of this radical infinite, as has been done in a number of religions, or one can say that such a personal reality cannot be because the divine cannot be limited to form, limited to person, and must be impersonal and formless. But at the same time, what Sri Aurobindo is pointing out is that the two can coexist as self-formulations of the divine. In other words, we can conceive of, or the divine can conceive of itself, or the divine is, not just conceive, but is an infinite person. Now this again is a paradox. How can there be an infinite person? But he says that such a paradox is only a paradox at the level of the mind. It does not need to be a paradox at the level of the supermind. So this approach that Sri Aurobindo is taking, though here he does not explicitly carry it into a reasoning mode based on empiricism of the world, of the cosmos, but rather moves it into an empiricism of experience, we could take it one more step in the empiricism of cosmic understanding by looking at the religions of the world. And we can see very clearly, in an anthropological sense, that there are innumerable religions that have arisen in human history, sometimes in the same region, sometimes as divisions of the same religion, which assert a certain kind of cosmic understanding of reality and of the divine, which could certainly speculatively be true, which is a complete world picture, as one may say. And then one has to ask the question, how can so many formulations that may be true coexist? How can all of them, you know, be around? And at the level of the mind, which deals with either ors, we find that there are these radical problems between these, the formulations of these religions. This is why even if we assert a perennial philosophy, Sanatan Dharma, or, you know, some kind of one religion, if we really probe these religions, we find that they come to a point where they part company. Each one parts company with the other. The New Age is premised on this kind of perennial philosophy, and it's become like a popular buzzword or buzz thought, if you want to call it that, which assumes that all these different religions are saying the same thing. You'll hear this in many, many contexts. They're all saying the same thing. But the fact is, they're not saying the same thing. Sometimes they're saying radically opposite things. And this is the reason why warring religions exist in the world. Why we haven't been able to solve our problems. Because at the level of doctrine, there are radical differences. So, the reason for this is ultimately what Sri Aurobindo is pointing out, that in our mind, these differences each pose themselves as a presentation of reality and of the divine and the relation between the two. And so, how can one resolve this? This is a very big problem, a cosmic problem, which has usually been resolved either by saying that all these are imaginings, let's forget about it. The atheistic solution is to try to ameliorate the condition of humanity and accept the fact that we will never know what truth is. And the other side of the solution is that let's get out of this and plunge into a radically infinite, indeterminable reality that alone exists and to which this world is an illusion. These are the two solutions that we have to solve this problem. Otherwise, we can choose to believe in a limited understanding, which is also an infinite understanding. One may say, as he says over here, a boundless finite understanding. And each one of these boundless finite understandings can be a religion that we cling to with our orthodoxy, and at some point feel if we could get rid of everybody else who believes anything otherwise, we will have established the kingdom of God on earth. See? So this is the one may say even the contemporary predicament which relates to what Sri Aurobindo is talking about here. And so that's what brings us to this part where the last paragraph that we finished, where Sri Aurobindo is pointing to the fact that we approach, even at overmind, this divine as a reality that can be looked at either as having some positive content or having no positive content. And both are equal, as it were, nirguna and saguna. In his epic Savitri, he arrives at this point in the canto called The Self of Mind in Ashwapati's journeys. In The Self of Mind, everything that he has experienced so far is put under doubt. And a skeptic ray completely annuls the possibility of the reality of the cosmos. And it is only beyond that that he encounters a being that is mysterious to him at that point. Now, similarly over here, we have reached that kind of area, but he also is reasoning through that and saying that, as we said, that determination is a self-determination, that radical infinite indeterminable can determine itself, and its self-determination are the cosmoses. They are not illusions, they are self-determinations. And we experience it in our own being through the very various faculties that we have. And he points out over here how the power of that existent has become the cosmos and how we experience it. He says, these in action would appear to our cognition as aspects of its being. So he's talking about the powers of truth, okay, that are expressing the manifestation of the endless truths of being's own self-awareness. These in action would appear to our cognition as aspects of its being, to our spiritual sense as powers and movements of its dynamis, to our aesthesis as instruments and formulations of its delight of existence. Creation would then be a self-manifestation, it would be an ordered deploying of the infinite possibilities of the infinite. And that is, you know, we talked about the plane of immanence and the plane of consistency in the terminology of Gilles Deleuze, and that is looking at that radical infinity in a ordered form, which is the ordered deploying of the infinite possibilities of the infinite, the plane of consistency of the divine. So these three ways of appearance, of self-appearance to us, would relate to the reason Sri Aurobindo brings that up is he's going to develop that and show us that it would relate to the three primary self-presenting modalities of the transcendent. That which appears to our cognition as aspects of its being relates to pure being or sat. That which appears to our spiritual sense as powers and movements of its dynamis relates to transcendent being as chit. And that which appears to our aesthesis as instruments and formulations of its delight of existence relates to the third transcendent principle or ananda. So sat, chit, ananda are the three principles that we find that are manifesting itself through being, power of being, and delight of being. These are the three principles that form the very basis of the urge towards self-manifestation. If being is to manifest, it must deploy its power, and if it deploys its power, it is not out of any necessity, but out of pure delight. So these are the three primary principles. Now the fourth primary principle is the fact that it is manifesting in an ordered form. Creation would be, as he says, an ordered deploying of the infinite possibilities of the infinite. And this ordering principle is supermind of vijnana. So that the four principles that we see giving determination to the indeterminable are being, consciousness, delight, and supermind. That's how that last paragraph that we see leads into the bridging of the radical relativity of overmind and the radical infinity of the transcendent.
So I think we read the paragraph starting with our fundamental cognition. Shall we read that again at this point, Devashila?
Yeah, please, if somebody would read it again. Mm-hmm.
Daniel Harris, would you like to start? Are you there, or is your microphone muted, or?
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Oh, okay, thanks. Okay, our fundamental cognition of the Absolute, our substantial spiritual experience of it, is the intuition of the direct experience of an infinite and eternal existence. An infinite and eternal consciousness, an infinite and eternal delight of existence. In overmental and mental cognition, it is possible to make discrete and even to separate this original unity into the three self-existent aspects, for we can experience a pure, causeless, eternal bliss so intense that we are that alone. existence, consciousness seem to be swallowed up in it. No longer ostensibly in presence, a similar experience of pure and absolute consciousness and a similar exclusive identity with it is possible. And there can be too, a like identifying experience of pure and absolute existence. But to a supermind cognition, these three are always an inseparable trinity, even though one can stand in front of the others and manifest its own spiritual determinants. For each has its primal aspects or its inherent self-formulations. For all of these together are original to the triune absolute. Love, joy, and beauty are the fundamental determinants of the divine delight of existence. And we can see at once that these are of the very stuff and nature of that delight. They are not alien impositions on the being of the absolute or creations supported by it, but outside it. They are truths of its being, native to its consciousness, powers of its force of existence. So too is it with fundamental determinants of the absolute consciousness, knowledge and will. They are truths and powers of the original consciousness force and are inherent in its very nature. This authenticity becomes still more evident when we regard the fundamental spiritual determinants of the absolute existence. They are its prime power, or pardon me, they are its triune powers, necessary first postulates for all of its self-creation or manifestation. Self, the divine, the conscious being, Atman, Ishwara, and Purusha. If we pursue the process of self-manifestation...
Dan, we can stop there.
Okay,
thanks. So, as he has prepared the ground in the previous paragraph, he is, sort of bringing to the front these three powers of the transcendent over here. As he has prepared the ground, as we just discussed, of a pure existence, its power of existence, or its power of self-determination, and its delight of existence. And these three, pure being as Sat, power of being, self-consciousness, and power of creativity of the being Chit, and delight of creation being Ananda. These are, one may say, the first determinants of radical infinite being. So these first determinants, or these first, you may not even call them determinants. Actually, you may call them the essence. The essence has already in it these three, but the three can emerge and become three infinities. It's like one radical infinity, an amorphous infinity, which can emerge in the form of three infinities. Being, its power of being, because its power of being, or its self-awareness as power, being something which turns upon itself. I am aware of, it's what we call the reflexive turn. It is reflexivity in its origin, being able to look at itself, or turn on itself. And delight, infinite delight, which formulates its own reality creatively through infinite ways. This infinite turning upon itself is also a move, which is a aspect of infinite delight. infinite delight is infinite freedom and infinite possibility. And that's the reason why these possibilities of self-awareness are so closely connected to the intrinsic property of self-delight. So these may be called the intrinsic properties of being, power of being and delight of being. So these become the three, and each one of them can become an infinity that emerges out of the infinity of being. See, the infinity of self-consciousness can turn on the infinity of being as if to become conscious of it. It becomes a relation, and this is the original duality. And the original duality is already an original trinity, because it is as if the self-consciousness of being turned on being would never be able to do so were it not for the delight of self-awareness. The delight, the intrinsic delight, is what motivates the entire self-exploration of being through its self-awareness. So, at the level of mind and even at overmind, these three are seen as three completely, radically different realities. Again, just as he pointed out, all-inclusive cosmos and the negation of nothingness are two infinities. Just like that, existence, consciousness, bliss are three infinities in the cosmic sense. But these three infinities are coexisting self presentations and simultaneous properties of the one. And that is the case in the supramental cognition of these, as he points out, that if we were to rise, and the reason he's calling it supermind is specifically that if we are to think about it of an infinite, indeterminable being, such a being can be thought of as a radical chaos. But a radical chaos is also determining itself, and so the principle of self-determination cannot but be something which has some relationship with mind, because it is intelligence that allows us to intuit order. So what is the ordering aspect of the self-determination of being acting through the relationship between being, consciousness and bliss? Such a ordering faculty must be a supermind. That's the reason why when we are looking at the determination of the indeterminable, the self-determination of this, of the indeterminable, we must posit a way of self-appearance that is supramental, that is supermind. That's the reason why to a supermind cognition, the determinations of the indeterminable appear. And the first determinations are these three. They are one, and yet they are being put into relation as if they were three. And then out of that come the self-determinations of each of these three. And so Sri Aurobindo is actually laying out a hierarchy of the ordering of the indeterminable through its self-determination into cosmos. And so from pure being, actually he goes the reverse way. He starts with pure delight. Out of pure delight arises three determinations of its own self. They are love, joy, and beauty. And we can think of these three. Joy is the subjective experience of delight. Beauty is the objective presentation of delight. And love mediates between the two. So these are the ways in which delight manifests its truths as determinations in a cosmos. Similarly, he moves on to talk about the consciousness, the self-awareness of being, and he says that that determines itself in terms of knowledge and will. Consciousness itself is a determinant, you see. It's the power of consciousness, as we say. And power of consciousness, to be conscious, to be aware, has on the one hand its natural attribute of knowledge. It gives us knowledge. On the other hand, it becomes mobilized as will. See, the power. Okay. So, chittapas. On the one hand, we have jnana. On the other hand, we have tapas. Chit is appearing as jnana and tapas. These are its two self-determinants. And similarly, we finally come to pure being. And being appears in its three self-determinations as Atman or Self, Lord, what he calls the Divine, or the Lord, or Ishvara, and Conscious Being, or Purusha. Atman, Ishvara, and Purusha. Now, we also see that these three at each level are related to being, consciousness, and not necessarily always bliss, but also in some ways supermind itself. See? So there may be a principle which is closer to objectivity, which is pure being without consciousness. It's objective. It's not subjective. Its subjectivity is latent in it. It's pure object, just like matter is pure objectivity. So too, the kind of nature of being as a nakedness or purity of self is a pure objectivity. And then you may have a power aspect to it, a will or power aspect to it, and Ishvara relates to that because Ishvara is Lord. If there is a cosmos and a universe of power, there must be a Lord of power. So that's where what our notions of God come in the sense of somebody who is all powerful. And it must also be conscious being, and that conscious being is its self-consciousness and relates again to knowledge and in that sense to mentality and supramentality, and that is Purusha. So we find that these principles manifest their truths, and these truths are related again to the trinity of the principles themselves in each of the three, and that these self-determinations then become the powers that create the cosmos, that are present in the cosmos.
So when Sri Aurobindo is experiencing the supermind at that time, or even when others speak about it, do we conceptualize them, or do we actually see these as distinct things, being, bliss, and do we see them as distinct things, quote-unquote, see, or is it more a conceptualization of something?
No, they are experienced, as he's pointing out, they are experienced both as one and separate. That is why the paradox is bridged over there. It is the self-determinations of the one. So that they can be seen as completely separate, but they can also be seen as the one that is infinite. So since the one is infinite, it can, other orders of infinity can emerge from it, or it can present itself in infinite infinities, as it were. So part of the experience of supermind is this one and infinite coexistence, as it were. So they are seen as separate, but they are also seen as one. See? The one and the many, unity and plurality, are coexistent experiences of supermind. One does not, is not privileged over the other. They are both given radical importance, and they are the same.
And then when you were talking before this, you spoke about the overmind and where many things exist, but they are not seen as one. Is that correct?
Yeah, completely correct. That these are, they're seen, then there Sri Aurobindo actually, in Savitri, he talks about this. There are planes to the overmind. The overmind itself is not one single thin consciousness. It's a multi-layered level of consciousness. And in certain of the planes of the overmind, there is a kind of a coexistence, a complete a radical relativity of different cosmic schemes. But they nevertheless, each one of them has a sense that the others are also divine. It is that tattvam asi principle that predominates there. That I may be the divine, but you are also the divine. You see, that kind of a principle predominates there. The reason why we war with our philosophies and religions is because overmind is permeated by light and by the sense of the one. But that sense of the one becomes lesser and lesser the lower we come into the immersion into Prakriti, the sleep of consciousness. But over there you find that these are coexisting self-presentations of the divine that know each other to be self-presentations of the divine. Yet, what differs is that each of these self-presentations cannot become any other. They are already formulated, as it were. Each one is already a fixed archetype. This is the world of the archetypes. This, in its highest sense, is what Jung was talking about when he talked about the collective unconscious and the world of the archetypes. They cannot become anything else than what their the truth of the archetype. Now, in supermind, you have, on the other hand, each of these is the one. The radical infinity of the one has become the radical infinity of each of these. Therefore, each of these knows itself simultaneously to be that one. Not that the one has become it, and the one has become others as well, but that it is the one that is self-present as all these, and therefore it can change itself and become whatever else it wants. This is like an infinity of power present in every infinity of being.
So in the mind, when in our normal day-to-day life, when we kind of try to practice it, try to conceptualize another point of view which we may not agree with. So then that's merely a mental attempt at trying to simulate this, right?
Yeah, it is a mental attempt to try to simulate it, and at its highest, it can bring us a little touch of overmind. It can bring us, Sri Aurobindo also talks about the intervening planes of mind above our mind leading up to overmind. The higher mind, then illumined mind, intuition, and overmind. Now, even at the higher mind, it is possible to arrive at a mutual coexistence of truths, allowing for their relative self-presentation of the one truth. You see, that kind of sense begins to emerge already from the higher mind. The fullness of its understanding is not there, but the sense begins to emerge from there. So, as a result, it's possible to have a kind of a world of toleration, as it were, a world of the coexistence of representations of divinity. And such a world can be the basis of a harmonious cosmos. But true harmony of coexisting realities can only come in overmind. And true oneness can only come in supermind.
But even in regular day-to-day life, it is not the, I mean, you know, at a certain way we are coexisting, right? It's not the case that all of us are, actually actively challenging other people's beliefs, or at least mentally we have accepted others to be who they are and let others be as long as a certain boundary is maintained.
Yeah, but that is because what normally happens in our everyday existence is that our life is not actually directed or led by our mental philosophies and beliefs. We are an amalgam of mental, vital, physical, and psychic sort of impulses. And usually what we do is we don't really hold on to any particular philosophy as being the ultimate truth. We hold on to a preference. But if we were to do that, like that's what we call fundamentalists. A fundamentalist is a person who cannot leave that idea that alone, that there is a certain formulation of the divine. And if that is the one that is at the forefront of their minds all the time, then that becomes a contradiction with others who have other thoughts. And they certainly cannot live with those others. Now, in the case of ordinary existence, what happens is that we hold half-baked forms of, cosmic understanding. We are partly driven by our need to coexist and to, fulfill our ambitions, for example, for which we don't care if somebody holds some other kind of view, or to some extent we have a little glimmering of psychic human unity. That's another kind of thing. We share our humanity, for example. These are the ways in which we find toleration. Not because we accept the fact that others have other world philosophies or world views and we, accept them to be equally true. Usually human beings don't go that far.
Yeah, thank you, Devashish. That makes sense. Shall we read the next paragraph?
Sure. if there's no other questions or comments.
John Robert, would you like to read next?
Yes. If we pursue the process of self-manifestation farther, we shall see that each of these aspects or powers reposes in its first action on a triad or trinity. For knowledge inevitably takes its stand in a trinity of the knower, the known, and knowledge. Love finds itself in a trinity of the lover, the beloved, and love. Will is self-fulfilled in a trinity of the Lord of the will, the object of the will, and the executive force. Joy has its original and utter gladness in a trinity of the enjoyer, the enjoyed, and the delight that unites them. Self, as inevitably appears and founds its manifestation in a trinity of self as subject, self as object, and self-awareness holding together self as subject-object. These and other primal powers and aspects assume their status among the fundamental spiritual determinations of the infinite. All others are determinants of the fundamental spiritual determinants, significant relations, significant powers, significant forms of being, consciousness, light, energies, conditions, ways, lines of the truth process of the consciousness force of the eternal, imperatives, possibilities, actualities of its manifestation. All this deploying of powers and possibilities and their inherent consequences is held together by supermind cognition in an intimate oneness. It keeps them founded consciously on the original truth and maintained in the harmony of the truths they manifest and are in their nature. There is here no imposition of imaginations, no arbitrary creation. Neither is there any division, fragmentation, irreconcilable contrariety, or disparateness. But in mind of ignorance, these phenomena appear. For there, a limited consciousness sees and deals with everything as if all were separate objects of cognition or separate existences, and it seeks so to know, possess, and enjoy them, and gets mastery over them, or suffers their mastery. But behind its ignorance, what the soul in it is seeking for is the reality, the truth, the consciousness, the power, the delight by which they exist. The mind has to learn to awaken to this true seeking and true knowledge veiled within itself, to the reality from which all things hold their truth, to the consciousness of which all consciousnesses are entities, to the power from which all get what force of being they have within them, to the delight of which all delights are partial figures. This limitation of consciousness and this awakening to the integral consciousness are also a process of self-manifestation, are a self-determination of the spirit. Even when contrary to the truth in their appearances, the things of the limited consciousness have in their sense and reality a divine significance. they too bring out a truth or a possibility of the infinite, of some such nature, as far as it can be expressed in mental formulas, would be the supramental cognition of things, which sees the one truth everywhere, and would so arrange its account to us of our existence, its report of the secret of creation and the significance of the universe.
So here, Sri Aurobindo starts by talking about how each of these powers are self-manifesting truths of the original Trinity of existence, consciousness, and bliss depends further on a Trinity. And these Trinities are, in fact, the dualities of subject and object and a mediating principle between them. Just as we had the original Trinity arising as the self-consciousness of being, and being itself splitting each other and looking at each other as subject and object and mediated by delight. See, this is the way in which we find the original triplicity is multiplied in the powers of each of these three. Now this is at the root of the very idea of triplicity, actually, of the triple, and the mystic significance of the triangle. So this is why we find in the oldest esoteric literatures the basis of manifestation lying in the emergence of the triangle. This is the Pythagorean triangle, this is the triangle of the Trikona in Indian Tantra, the triangles in Sri Aurobindo's own symbol, and the basis of the Trinity in Christianity as well. We find how they can appear as personified as the Trinity of the Lord, the Divine Mother, and the Holy Child, which is the psychic being. So we find that this Trinity is then mobilized to create a cosmos in a variety of formulations. But we find also that these three or these sets of three can become, as he has pointed out earlier, completely different, sundered, separated infinities, unable to see themselves as one in the ignorance, what is called the ignorance, which starts from overmind. But in supermind, they are always one and three at the same time. They are always seen as one and triple by each of its nodes. Each of the nodes knows the entire triangle to be itself, as it were. So this is the basis of the supramental Trinity. But Sri Aurobindo points out that even this, you know, this difference that occurs between supermind and overmind is a truth of supermind, is a truth of being. It's the truth of being also which may be thought of in terms of a trinity. And in the Indian traditions, this truth is the truth of vidya, avidya, and the bridging of vidya and vidya, what Sri Aurobindo calls vidya avidya with a hyphen in between. And that, in fact, is the reality of the bridging of supermind and overmind. So those kind of truths leads him to a very interesting part of that paragraph, where from the philosophical he enters into more like the experiential or the existential. And that's the part where he takes on a tone where he is as if exhorting the listener in a certain way, where he's saying, where he says, that part where he's talking about the fact that in mind of ignorance, these phenomena appear. Limited consciousness sees and deals with everything as if all were separate objects of cognition or separate existences, and it seeks so to know, possess and enjoy them, and gets mastery over them or suffers their mastery. But behind its ignorance, what the soul in it is seeking for is the reality, the truth, the consciousness, the power, the delight by which they exist. This indeed is the relation between avidya and vidya, ignorance and knowledge, the relative existence and the absolute existence. So what he exhorts at that point, it comes immediately after that, the mind has to learn to awaken to this true seeking and true knowledge veiled within itself, to the reality from which all things hold their truth, to the consciousness of which all consciousnesses are entities, to the power from which all get what force of being they have within them, to the delight of which all delights are partial figures. This, the mind has to learn to awaken to this true seeking and true knowledge, is the primary principle that exists within the yoga of Sri Aurobindo. Because this, if this awakening is not present, then the yoga is not possible. This is the aspiration of the psychic being. And at a certain place, Sri Aurobindo has been asked whether in the yogas that don't believe in the psychic being has any part or not. For example, say Buddhism. Sri Aurobindo says, the seeking for the divine reality in any of its forms cannot occur unless the psychic is awakened within it. The psychic may be awakened in a limited way, only in mind, or only in the vital, or only in the physical, or only in some other aspect of any of these. But it is that awakening that he's talking about, which is at the very root of the bridging of the avidya and the vidya, the bridging of the absolute and the relative. That has to occur, and that's the point he's making over here, that once we understand this division, then there must awaken us the aspiration to bridge the division. That becomes that, you know, the priest of the sacrifice, the flame that leads us out of our ignorance and into the mobilization of this triple principle as the one. That's what he makes even further clear, where he says, this limitation of consciousness and this awakening to the integrality of consciousness are also a process of self-manifestation, are a self-determination of spirit. So the fact that ignorance has been created and the fact that the return to knowledge is the awakening of the aspiration towards that unity is another triplicity by which the one is manifesting itself. Its own self-forgetting as another infinity through which it views itself and calls itself into itself.
Jacob, would you like to read next?
Sure. At the same time, indeterminability is also a necessary element in our conception of the Absolute and in our spiritual experience. This is the other side of the supramental regard on being and on things. The Absolute is not limitable or definable by any one determination or by any sum of determinations. On the other side, it is not bound down to an indeterminable vacancy of pure existence. On the contrary, it is the source of all determinations. Its indeterminability is the natural, the necessary condition, both of its infinity of being and its infinity of power of being. It can be infinitely all things because it is no thing in particular and exceeds any definable totality. It is this essential indeterminability of the Absolute that translates itself into our consciousness through the fundamental negating positives of our spiritual experience. The immobile, immutable Self, the Nirguna Brahman, the eternal without qualities, the pure, featureless one existence, the impersonal, the silence void of activities, the non-being, the ineffable, and the unknowable. On the other side, it is the essence and source of all determinations. And this dynamic essentiality manifests to us through the fundamental affirming positives, in which the Absolute equally meets us. For it is the Self that becomes all things, the Saguna Brahman, the eternal with infinite qualities, the one who is many, the infinite person, who is the source and foundation of all persons and personalities, the Lord of creation, the Word, the master of all works and action. It is that which, being known, all is known. These affirmatives correspond to those negatives. For it is not possible in a supramental cognition to split asunder the two sides of the one existence. Even to speak of them as sides is excessive. For they are in each other. Their coexistence or one existence is eternal, and their powers sustaining each other found the self-manifestation of the infinite.
So here Sri Aurobindo is returning back to the original indeterminability of radical infinity that we spoke about, and that lies behind all the paragraphs that we have considered so far. The fact that it is the one and the infinite, the one that is infinite, the one that views itself as one and at the same time can never exhaust its infinity, the one that wonders at itself because it can never fully know itself. And that is indeed the inextricable reality of that infinite one. It can be seen as the two realities of the one and the infinite. And that is what overmind begins to do. But that so doing makes possible a diversity which manifests the infinity of the one and gives an ordered body to the infinity of the one, a body without end. So this is how reality presents itself, and we find that all the various ways in which philosophies have perceived and religions have perceived reality, whether all the names that he gives over there, on the one side the names of what has been called negative theology. Negative theology proceeds through negations, through asserting that anything that has been experienced can be transcended, that what is in the Indian system called neti neti, not this, not this, etc. And if we wish to give it a name, then too the name is a negative name. The immobile, immutable self, the nirguna Brahman, the eternal without qualities, the pure featureless one existence, the impersonal, the silence void of activities, the non-being, the ineffable, the unknowable. And then on the other side, we have all the other philosophies and religions that assert the oneness of God, the theistic religions, the ones that proceed by what in the Indian tradition has been called ihaiva, ihaiva, this too, an inclusive movement that keeps expanding and including more and more into itself. And that is given all the various positive names that he gives to it over here. The self that becomes all things, the Saguna Brahman, the eternal with infinite qualities, the one who is the many, the infinite person, who is the source and foundation of all persons and personalities, the Lord of creation. That infinite person is what we find in the Vishwarupa of the Gita. It is Purushottama. The Lord of creation is the Parameshwara, the Word, the Master, that's the Logos, the Master of all works and actions. It is that which being known, all is known, which is what the Upanishads are seeking for, the great project of knowledge, gnosis, that is the gnosis. These affirmatives correspond to those negatives. And that's why he says that each side is equally true. It can never be determined, but there can be a determination that transcends every indeterminate. just as there can be an indeterminate that transcends every determination. This is the processive understanding of the temporality of the divine. But outside of it, these two, the indeterminate and the determined, they stand as two realities, Nirguna and Saguna Brahman, coexistent in overmind, radical relativities in overmind, and the one with two heads in the supermind, the one with the two as one.
Mateo, would you like to read next?
Okay. But neither is the separate cognition of them entirely an illusion or a complete error of the ignorance. This too has its validity for spiritual experience. For these primary aspects of the Absolute are fundamental spiritual determinants or indeterminants answering at the spiritual end or beginning to the general determinants or generic indeterminants of the material end or inconscient beginning of the descending and ascending manifestation. Those that seem to us negative carry in them the freedom of the infinite from limitation by its own determinations. Their realization disengages the spirit within, liberates us, and enables us to participate in this supremacy. Thus, when once we pass into or through the experience of a mutable self, we are no longer bound and limited in the inner status of our being by the determinations and creations of nature. On the other, the dynamic side, this original freedom enables the consciousness to create a world of determinations without being bound by it. It enables it also to withdraw from what it has created and recreate in a higher truth formula. It is on this freedom that is based the spirit's power of infinite variation of the truth possibilities of existence, and also its capacity to create without tying itself to its workings, any and every form of necessity or system of order. The individual being, too, by experience of these negating absolutes, can participate in that dynamic liberty, can pass from one order of self-formulation to a higher order. At the stage when from the mental it has to move towards its supramental status, one most liberatingly helpful, if not indispensable experience that may intervene, is the entry into a total nirvana of mentality and mental ego, a passage into the silence of the spirit. In any case, a realization of the pure self must always precede the transition to that mediating eminence of the consciousness from which a clear vision of the ascending and descending stairs of manifested existence is commanded, and the possession of the free power of ascent and descent becomes a spiritual prerogative. An independent completeness of identity with each of the primal aspects and powers, not narrowing as in the mind into a soul-engrossing experience, experience seeming to be final and integral, for that would be incompatible with the realization of the unity of all aspects and powers of existence, is a capacity inherent in consciousness in the infinite. That indeed is the base and justification of the overmind cognition and its will to carry each aspect, each power, each possibility to its independent fullness. But the supermind keeps always and in every status or condition the spiritual realization of the unity of all. The intimate presence of the unity is there, even within the completest grasp of each thing, each state given its whole delight of itself, power and value. There is thus no losing sight of the affirmative aspects, even when there is the full acceptance of the truth of the negative. The overmind keeps still the sense of this underlying unity. That is for it the secure base of the independent experience. In mind, the knowledge of the unity of all aspects is lost on the surface. The consciousness is plunged into engrossing, exclusive, separate affirmations. But there too, even in the mind's ignorance, the total reality still remains behind the exclusive absorption and can be recovered in the form of a profound mental intuition or else in the idea or sentiment of an underlying truth of integral oneness. In the spiritual mind, this can develop into an ever-present experience.
So perhaps we can take this up next time again, Shyam, because this is a very, very loaded and powerful paragraph in which Sri Aurobindo is showing us the truth and justification of the kind of experience that we have, what we can call the experience of the ignorance. What is the truth of the ignorance? And so maybe this can be a paragraph that was read and we can revisit next time.
Sure, and it's also getting close to 9:30, so if it's going to be a longer discussion, then perhaps we can start 2 Saturdays from now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay. So, Devashita, we'll close it out just now. It's we'll continue October 25th at the same time, and I'll... upload the recording for this and we can reread the paragraph then.
Shyam, October 25th, actually I think I might be in transit on that day. So let me see, because I'm leaving for India on Wednesday and I will be back on the 26th.
Okay.
Why don't I do this? Let me check my calendar and make sure, and I'll send you an email and we can sort of verify the next date accordingly.
Sure. So then we'll wait for an update on when the next class. It looks like most likely it won't be on the 25th. So we can perhaps decide that offline and post to the group.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, everyone. We'll continue next time.
Thank you, Gebishish. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Bye.